Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good evening, listeners. This is Vestita de Jesus with my co-host, Sifu Robert Deal, and you've just tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. We've got a great show ahead of us tonight. But first, let me go ahead and bring up my co-host, Mike, here. Sifu Bob, how you doing this evening?
You know, I'm doing great, Sifu. This is going to be a great show. I'm really excited about it because we've got some... Now, let me explain. We've got some great Tai Chi masters. People that have been teaching in the arts. We've got Sifu Carl Proton, David Dorian Ross, Sifu Mobley, Sifu Viola, Sifu Kim, and then, and of course you, you're a Tai Chi master in Chan style. And then there's me.
I don't consider myself all that good myself, but.
Well, and then there's me. I'm like the external art guy, not the internal art guy.
But and, you do martial arts, so that counts.
Yeah, I guess so. But you know, it's really funny. My daughter knows I go down to Starbucks every Sunday before the show to keep me awake. Not that you're going to bore me to death or anything, but just to keep me going, right? And she bought the scented candle last night. I walked into her room and she had it lit, and I, wow, that smells really good, hon. What is it? It smells like chocolate chip cookies fresh out of the oven. And she looks me right in the eye and she said, "Yeah, that's a great idea. Go get me some chocolate chip cookies when you go to Starbucks." I went, "What? How did that happen?"
We know who the real master is in your house.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, we do.
Not me.
That's awesome. Well, let's go ahead and introduce all of our guests right off the bat, so that way they can join us for our health and fitness news and your weird news segment of the show. We're very honored to have all of these great teachers that have agreed to join us this evening. Our first guest is the founder of the Taoist Institute in Burbank, California. That's over by you, Bob, like a hop, skip, and a jump away.
It is. In fact, I introduced you to it when you were down here in August.
Yes, and I fell in love with the Institute. It's great. And the Institute offers all sorts of classes, offers Tai Chi, Kung Fu, Bagua Zhang, Xing Yi Quan, Liu He Ba Fa, and Qigong. I hope I got them all. This instructor has studied the Chinese healing, spiritual, and martial arts for over 45 years, is licensed as a clinical and educational psychologist, and is also a certified Reiki master. So it's our pleasure and honor to welcome Grandmaster Carl Totten to the show. Welcome, Grandmaster Totten. How are you this evening?
Hello, I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is going to be a great show, and we're really happy you can join us. And our next guest is the star of the PBS television special Tai Chi Health and Happiness and the public television series, oh, I forgot what it was, Tai Chi in Paradise. I hope I got that right. The founder of Tai Chi Fitness Instructor Training, also known as FIT. In the art of Tai Chi, actually competitive Tai Chi, he's a record holder in the world of competitive Tai Chi. He's an 8-time U.S. national champion, world silver medalist, and 2-time world bronze medalist. It's my honor to welcome Mr. David Dorian Ross to our show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me here. It sounds like a great show.
Bob, did you say something?
It's going to be a wonderful. I did. Wasn't this the guy that just has all these awards and is just world-renowned? And didn't he just say he wasn't very good?
I think of myself as a perpetual student. I always have been, and I always will be. Just, I'm
awesome.
Still learning.
You know, awesome. Sir, that is a great, great statement. I love that statement. It's a great frame of mind to be a perpetual student is just a wonderful thing.
It is.
Yeah, this is Carl, and I agree that, you know, we are all students, and the day that we forget that, that's the day that we should probably stop teaching.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Hey. Mm-hmm.
That's right. All right, I'd like to bring on our next guest. Our next guest is a Chen-style Tai Chi Chuan and Yang-style Tai Chi Chuan and Qigong practitioner from Seattle, Washington, and she's the chief instructor of Wise Orkin Martial Arts right here in Seattle, which offers classes in Chen-style Tai Chi, Yang-style Tai Chi, Qigong, and Wing Chun Kung Fu. I'm pleased to introduce Sifu Viola Brumbaugh. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sifu Restita. I am honored to be in all of your company.
This is going to be fun. I'd like to bring on our next guest. Our next guest has practiced Yang-style Tai Chi since 1972 and is the chief instructor of the Amen Tai Chi Club in Santa Ana, California, which offers classes in Yang-style Tai Chi Chuan, and a routine that he himself developed called the 24 Tai Chi kick routine. He's also skilled in African drumming and also offers classes in African drumming. We're honored to welcome Sifu Ja Amen Mobley. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Yes, thank you for inviting me. Yes.
Thank you. And our last guest, which can't be with us in person, but rather in spirit, this particular practitioner is also a Chen style and Yang style Tai Chi Chuan practitioner, as well as Qigong practitioner. And she is the chief instructor of Embrace the Moon Tai Chi in Ballard, Washington, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump away from Seattle, about 10 minutes outside of Seattle. Embrace the Moon Tai Chi offers classes in Chen style Tai Chi, Yang style Tai Chi, Qigong, and Luhan Gong. And as I said, she can't join us tonight because of her teaching schedule, but we had pre-recorded an interview last night, and I pulled some some audio clips from our interview, and I'm going to be interspersing that in our discussion today. So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and I just want to tell our listeners, if you have any questions for any of our guests or if you'd like to add to our discussion, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. It looks like we do have some callers, if you do have a question, please press 1 at the prompt. That puts you at the top of the phone queue and lets me know you actually have a question instead of just listening to the show. So there are a lot of people that press 1, so I promise we'll get to your call here in just a little bit. Okay, so hang tight. So for our listeners, I just want to introduce our subject. Our subject, it's kind of hard to explain. In a nutshell, I guess the short way of putting it is the marketing of Tai Chi, its difficulties, its ins, its outs, its pros, its cons, the whole nine yards about marketing, you know, even up to the misconceptions that the general public can have about Tai Chi. So we're going to be discussing all that throughout the course of our show. But before we get to that panel discussion, and I'm hoping our callers will hang on for this, I want to just do a few announcements and a little bit of short news and Bob's weird news, and then we'll get to the panel discussion and getting to the calls. All right? So is everyone ready? Everyone's good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Awesome.
Ready.
Cool. Now, for all these announcements and stuff, all of you are very welcome to chime in and make comments at any time. So I'd like to do a Facebook shout-out real quick. Master Doug Wong had left a announcement on the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show group page, and usually when people leave events and announcements on the group page, we'll go ahead and announce them at the next show. And he's going to be in Guadalajara, Mexico, to do a seminar. So I'm pulling up the flyer right now, and it's all in Spanish. So I'm gonna have to translate it. It's gonna be on the I was gonna say 23 de febrero, but like English. The 23rd of February, and it's going to be at the Centro de Arte Asiático, the Center of Asian Martial Arts, and that's in can't read it. It's so small. Cerezo, it's in Cerezo, 1429 COL del Fresno. I don't know how the addresses work down there in Mexico, so I guess people will have to, like, find the flyer on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. The cost is, it says, I freaked out for a second, it says $600 per person, but I'm assuming it's pesos. He's going to be doing a seminar. It doesn't quite say what he, oh, he is going to be teaching Mokgar, Wing Chun, White Lotus, Inga Quen, and self-defense. This is straight from Doug Wong's White Lotus International website. So if you're close to Guadalajara, I can't speak today, or in Guadalajara, or can get into Mexico, check out the seminar. That'll be great.
Actually a good segue, Sifu, that we're going to have Sifu Doug and Sifu Carey as our guests in a couple weeks, and I want him to go more in depth about the seminar, exact cost, dates, place, and that sort of thing as well in 2 weeks.
And entirely in Spanish.
Next week. Right. And I apologize. That's next week we're having them on.
Yeah, I was good. I looked at the calendar and went, that's next week.
I know. Do I sound like, Sifu? I sound just like you. What day is it?
What day is it? Oh, man. If Bob wasn't around, I wouldn't know who's scheduled, because I'll just make up the marquees for the show and then get, like, all confused as to what date it is. And then I'll start, like, booking people over days that already have shows. And he has to go, no, that day's taken, remember? And I'm like, ooh, thanks, Bob. Yay, he's like my smartphone. Smarter than my smartphone, because my smartphone will only tell me what I put in it. So, oh, man. What, no joke, Bob? I was going to wait for you to say something about that.
No, that's something for offline.
Okay.
He's giving you a break, Rosita.
I know. He's so good at that. All right. So let's... I just want to go very briefly into the fitness news in a short nutshell, because I really want to have enough time to talk with all of our guests. In our fitness news today, I'm going to be posting this on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, and it's an article from the Livestrong.com website that's simply called The Benefits of Push-Ups. And, yeah, that's it, The Benefits of Push-Ups. It's not a martial arts punishment anymore. Actually, it never has been, although, you know, growing up in karate and other external arts, that was my life for a while, until I learned to be quiet in class. I was doing a lot of knuckle push-ups. But the thing is, though, in a lot of martial arts classes, especially for kids, if we do give push-ups, as a disciplinary measure, we tend to somehow maybe have the kids think that push-ups are a punishment, that it's something that's not going to be desirable, right? So when this article came up, I thought to myself, I'm going to post this, because everyone knows the benefits of push-ups. But, it's a nice, great reminder. So number one for push-ups. The number one benefit is building strength. It's one of the oldest and cheapest, you don't have to buy weights, exercises for the upper body that'll help build optimum strength in your forearms, your wrists, your triceps, your biceps, shoulders, and chest, and all those. Even a lot of celebrities such as Herschel Walker. Now, does Herschel Walker still play football, or is he a former football player?
Player, yes.
Former.
No, now he's an MMA star, right?
Herschel Walker? Really?
Yes.
Wow, I haven't been keeping up with the MMA at all. But Herschel Walker says that he does 100 push-ups every day. Every day.
I believe it.
Yeah, it's something that he says he's continued you know, well into his, well, I guess it says here that he is retired. I guess I should read the article first, but but it's something that he's been doing every day, and he says that the push-ups help him get in shape and stay in shape, and that's why he's always done them every day without fail. So, you know, if there are any kids listening, do your push-ups. It also increases metabolism. The push-ups, and I was taught this when I was in karate, that push-ups push your body toward, like any other exercise, physical exertion. And it forces your heart to work harder and the blood to pump faster. And in turn, this increases your metabolism and helps you burn more calories. And I still remember this feeling of how you feel after a workout of push-ups is done. You feel that pump. You feel that sense of, you know, I feel up. I feel good. And it's kind of like a runner's high, for me at least. So, you know, you guys feel the same way about push-ups?
No, I always felt like that. I always felt like, oh, go ahead.
I was just saying I'm always grateful when I'm finished.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like hitting yourself in the hand with a hammer because it feels so good when you stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing about push-ups, that there is actually a chart that you can get from the American College of Sports Medicine telling you how many you should be doing depending on your age. So I just get up in the morning and make sure I'm only doing what the 20-year-olds are doing, and that makes me feel better about myself.
Absolutely.
I love it. I love it. Now, where's that chart again? Because I want one. I'm curious.
Yeah. So this is the serious thing. So the American College of Sports Medicine, the ACSM, you can come up. They provide a lot of the standards for the fitness industry, like what are the protocols for doing exercise and what are the norms for gender and age group. So push-ups are part of the protocols for muscular endurance and break down by gender and different age segments, and it will tell you what is the norm, what's below average, what is you suck and you should go to a doctor, and what is really excellent. So you can go online and just, like I said, you know, I do 50 a morning, and then I go, okay, so I can go back to bed now.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could say that because it's, you know, every time I do class, you know, I do, depending on the day, I do three classes back to back, and they're all, you know, most of them are kids with the exception of the adult classes, of course, but I have to do them with the kids' classes. Otherwise, they, you know, they just think, oh, she's just going to stand there and tell us what to do, right? So I get down there and do them. And, you know, I always hit myself in the head sometimes when I go, okay, what push-ups do we do? And they go, elevator push-ups. And it's like, and how big is the building that this elevator is going to be? 20 floors. Okay, first floor, second floor, third floor, fourth floor, fifth floor. Bottom, basement, one, that's one. And we have to do 20 of them. And I'm like, why did I ask what? And I am
Rashida,
so glad.
This is Carl. And, sometimes I like to have people do what I call Tai Chi push-ups in slow motion. Those are fun.
Those are fun, 20 of those. Ooh, you know, that gave me an idea. 20
Good.
Tai Chi push-ups in a 20 floor elevator push-up drill. they won't come to class the next day.
and then when you're all in the building because they've all left.
Yeah.
That's when I've turned out the lights.
Exactly. All right. And I'm just going to do just two more. The whole write-up is going to be on Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. The push-ups benefit to women. Now, you know, we women, we typically have less upper body strength than the guys. Even though there's like an increase in women's bodybuilding and women's weightlifting, I would probably say that maybe about, I don't know, 45 to 50% of women probably aren't feeling comfortable about being that person that lifts barbells in the gym and, you know, pumps iron and stuff. But push-ups are the great equalizer. Women who do push-ups can quickly build strength in the chest, upper arms, forearms, and wrists. And doing only three sets of 10 to 15 push-ups a day is a great starting point for women who want to start getting stronger but don't necessarily want to be pumping steel. So great benefit to women. And last but not least, core strength. In order to support yourself in the toes and hand position, your core strength has to be there in order to stabilize you in the exercise. And, you know, and if you do stabilize yourself with proper form using your core, it'll really help your posture in the long run. So anyhow, that's just a short and skinny on the benefits of push-ups. It's not just a martial arts punishment anymore. So you can get that full write-up on the Dynamic Dojo radio show. Woohoo! All right. Well, you know what, Bob? I think it's time for Weird News. That's
oh,
right.
Nice intro.
You like that? The weird news.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You know, when I used to give punishment push-ups, I used to tell the students it was pushing California away from them.
Oh.
Well,
do you want to say something about that, or can we let that go?
I think we're letting it go.
Okay.
All right, Zigu Bob, I love this segment just because it's weird, it's funny, it's great. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, this story hit home because I'm a father of two,
mm-hmm.
and this goes to show you how stupid some people are. This
Ooh.
Is in Florida, and I guess in Florida they have liquor stores attached to strip clubs.
Oh.
And this gentleman, Kenneth Rowe, was arrested for allegedly leaving his baby boy in a strip club liquor store. Now, he was drunk for one thing, and his boy that he left in his liquor store was 11 months old.
Ugh. Crap. Oh, man.
And he was arrested for child abandonment. He should have been arrested for child endangerment, abandonment, drunk in public. Whatever
yeah.
they can nail this guy for.
Right.
So basically, cut it all short, he was arrested. His child was taken away from him and given to the state as a little girl.
Yeah. Wow.
The one I feel sorry for is the child's mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. For real. So, okay, so he came in to the liquor store, right, and
right.
left him there? Or did he ask? What did he do? Come in and go, here, I'm going to leave my kid. I'll be back. I mean, what did the liquor store people?
It says he was arrested for allegedly leaving his baby boy in a strip club liquor store. Drunk Florida dad stumbled into a strip club liquor store on Sunday night and left his 11-month baby at the establishment, cops say. Kenneth Rowe, 26, was reportedly wasted when he walked into Shark Lounge liquor store in Daytona Beach and asked a clerk to watch his baby boy, according to WFTV.
That's
crazy. It's unclear whether the clerk actually agreed, but Rowe nevertheless ditched his baby for the Shark Lounge Gentlemen's Club. That means he went in, asked him to watch his baby, and went and watched strippers.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to be doing a seminar there in February. I think I better check my roster to see if anybody, if that name is coming.
Yeah, because if he is, he's out.
Or he becomes gone. Your ookie all day.
All of a sudden, we're doing push hands all day, and this is the guy that's going to be falling.
You know, one thing I've said for years is that some people are just too stupid to have children. He sounds like he's one of them.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, to think that he can just, well, I mean, you know, to ask, you know, the employees, here, you know, watch my kid, or, you know, or to be stupid enough to leave your, I mean, if you're that drunk, well, first of all, what's he doing bringing his kid?
I guess that's
the most important thing. What the heck was he doing bringing his kid?
Well, I have to think that was that baby's lucky day.
Oh, yeah.
I have
yeah.
to think
yeah.
that was that
right.
baby's lucky day that it gets another chance now.
Right. That's for sure.
Well, and the clerk called the police to report that the baby was hungry and had a rash on his face.
Oh.
That's
man.
Terribly sad.
That is.
It's very, very, very sad.
Oh, gosh.
So I guess it's time to move on to weird laws.
Yes, let's move on to something less depressing.
Well, and, you know, Sifu, these laws are all Delaware, and some of them actually make sense, not like weeks in the past where the laws were just stupid. They were just so funny.
Right.
The first one is, in Delaware, no R-rated movies can be shown in a drive-in theater. That makes sense.
Okay, that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. You can watch the movie and see naked bodies and hear the cussing and that sort of thing. So that's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Getting married, this is funny, getting married on a dare is grounds for an annulment. No kidding, really?
God, if I had only known that earlier in my life. Now you tell me.
That's what you get for, you know, playing, like, you know, beer pong, you know. And then, you know, and then the dare, and yeah. Oh,
exactly.
God.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's funny.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, how, like we always say, something had to have happened for these laws to come into fruition.
Right. And the next one, you know, I'm skipping over one, but how many times have we been going to a wedding? Maybe we finished a workout, we're going somewhere nice, and we happen to change our clothes in our car, right?
Right.
In Delaware, that's illegal.
A person may not
change their clothes in their car.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So there are no surfers in Delaware?
Exactly. And the last one, it is illegal for somebody to whisper in church.
What?
How else do you communicate?
That's passing
how
notes.
Stay awake in church.
Yeah, you're supposed to pass notes, and yeah. All right. Well, that was Bob's weird news. Yay for Bob's weird news. All right, we got one more thing before we do a quick PSA break. It's our weekly trivia question of the week. Now, so for our listeners there that are listening, what we've been doing for the past few weeks is we have a weekly trivia question, and if you're the first caller with the first correct answer, you get to win bragging rights. That's about it. And a chance to be a guest co-host on an upcoming episode of the Dynamic Dojo Show. Now, I know that I should probably get a different prize for this, but that's all I can afford right now is be a co-host with me and Robert. And it's fun. You get to have fun and have a blast and talk with great martial artists. So anyhow, this is the trivia question. Oh, and for our guests that are with us now, you guys probably already know the answer. In fact, I'm 99.9% sure you guys already know the answer. You guys don't count. You guys cannot answer this because you guys are already on. Okay? So, was that my phone doing that? You guys hear that? Is it just me? Oh, well. Okay.
I thought it was the trivia. I thought it was the Jeopardy theme.
That's what I thought. It sounded like somebody's computer. But anyhow, this is the trivia question of the week. Who wrote Yield and Overcome, Bend and Be Straight? Now, like I said, our Tai Chi guests already know who this is, so you can't answer. This is for the listeners. Who wrote Yield and Overcome, Bend and Be Straight? First correct answer at 347-677-0699 gets to win bragging rights and a chance to be a guest co-host on the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. Yay, dun, dun. Woohoo! No callers, darn. Come on, callers. Okay, I see people on the... Oh, what am I doing now? Okay. I'm pressing buttons all over the place. I see people on the chat board. I see you. Call in. I know you guys know these answers. I got guest number 10407, 10526, 10785. Come on, you guys, call in. Come on. You guys know you want to do it. Anyhow... Okay, we're gonna go ahead and take a really, really short PSA break as soon as I can find my PSA. Oh, there we go. We're going to get a word from the Ad Council for just 1 minute, and we'll be right back.
Packers.
Vikings.
Red State.
Blue State.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But no matter how different we are, we're all connected, and we can all make a difference. That's why United Way brings people, expertise, and resources together to improve the education, income, and health of our communities, the building blocks for a better life. When we live united, our efforts, magnified by others, add up to real change. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly, so do our communities. But real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So let's look beyond our differences.
Live united.
One by one, let's make a difference. Let's reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all.
Live united.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. This is the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show on the Seika Network on Blog Talk Radio. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And we have a panel for our forum discussion today. We have Carl Totten, Viola Brumba, David Dorian Ross, and Ja Amen Mobley, myself and my co-host Robert Deal, and we're going to be discussing different ways of marketing Tai Chi myths and misconceptions, and the whole nine yards. Now, to open up our discussion, I'd like to remind our listeners that if you have any questions and would like to add to the discussion, please feel free to give us a call. We also have our chat board up underneath the Blog Talk Radio show marquee. You have to scroll down and you'll see a chat board there. And you can write your questions there and I can ask them for you. But it's always funner to call in. So let's go ahead and get started with our discussion. Now, what initially prompted this discussion was a conversation I had with Sifu Kim Ivey of Embrace the Moon Tai Chi. And what I'd like to do to open the discussion is I'd like to play a 10-minute soundbite from the interview that I had with Sifu Kim, just so that way our guests and our listeners can listen to it, and that way we can talk about it a little bit more. So here's the sound clip. All right, Sifu Kim, thank you for joining us for this pre-recorded interview. We're really kind of bummed out that you can't join us on Sunday, but thank you for agreeing to meet me for this pre-recorded interview.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thanks so much. Yeah, I'll be teaching when you're on live. So thanks so much for making this possible. Yeah.
And it's going to be the first day of your new quarter, correct?
It is. That's right. Cool. That's right.
Awesome. Well, I just want to do a shameless plug for Sifu Kim Ivey's school, Embrace the Moon Tai Chi in Ballard, Washington. If you are in the Seattle area or visiting the Seattle area and want to get a hold of a great Tai Chi instructor in a great school in Ballard, which is a suburb of Seattle, just look up Embrace the Moon Tai Chi or Kimberly Ivey. Just Google that up and you'll be able to get all of her contact information. So there's my
Thanks so much. Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah.
My pleasure. So the reason why I wanted to do this show was because as Tai Chi practitioners, even our listeners out there that practice Tai Chi, we've all probably seen different types of advertising through print or media, television, radio, about different ways that Tai Chi is advertised. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending, some of the advertising can sometimes put a one-sided light on Tai Chi, or an incorrect light on Tai Chi, or even go so far as to demean Tai Chi as a whole, as a martial art. So my question is what got you concerned about how Tai Chi is being marketed to the general public?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, because we were on Facebook together, what happened was the exact piece of advertising that landed in my inbox was for your one of your guests, David Ross's PBS special, and the advertising said, if you can wave your hands, you can do Tai Chi. And before I continue, I should really state that David was my very first Tai Chi teacher. Hi, David.
Oh, wow.
And And this was like 27 years ago in Portland, Oregon. And as David knows, I hold huge respect for him, the opportunities and inspiration I received during those years training with him. Mm-hmm. I went to China for the first time, and, you know, really he set me on a great path. That being said, that this particular piece of advertising, and I do want to make a distinction in contrast to the great things he's doing to raise people's consciousness about Tai Chi, that exact piece of advertising, at the moment that I got it, did rub me the wrong way. And I said something on Facebook about how I didn't like how Tai Chi was being marketed, and I did cite this specific ad. And before I knew it, and you were on it with me, I had 50-plus comments, you know, and whatever, 10 shares or whatever, you know, and people were both furiously pro and equally furiously con about, you know, advertising Tai Chi in this particular way. And I thought, wow, I've really hit a nerve. And, you know, for me, the moment of that posting, it really came less about that specific promo and more as a kind of a perfect storm of what I see the general trend that Tai Chi and Qigong marketing is taking over the past few years. You know, as you know, we see ads for Tai Chi that are really people doing yoga and not very good yoga at that, terrible knee alignment, hips sticking out, and, you know, gyms are hiring teachers that, you know, maybe they really know a lot about dance, but they don't know anything about Tai Chi. And this actually happened in my own gym, and I really had to talk with them about it, you know, and there's Tai Chi for X, Y, and Z, you know, and there's just there's a huge amount of advertising in Tai Chi that for me feels like what they're trying to do is promote Tai Chi as kind of this, you know, oh, well, you know, if you can't do anything else, you can do Tai Chi, or Tai Chi, it's so easy, anybody can do it. And, you know, I think that, you know, what's interesting for me is, you know, when people come to class and they come, you know, based on, you know, seeing a promo or seeing an ad, like years ago there was that Celebrex commercial with people in their orange outfits and dogs jumping up. And, you know, they come in and they expect Tai Chi to kind of almost be, you know, something that they can do if they can't do anything else. And then all of a sudden the Tai Chi teacher says, you know, just, you know, basically stand and relax your hips and breathe. And all of a sudden they're rubbing their thighs and they're feeling, you know, they're starting to sweat. And there's this kind of cognitive and physical dissonance between how they read Tai Chi in the media and what they're experiencing. And I do find what happens then is that they lose any kind of inspiration or motivation because it doesn't make sense to them. Wait a minute, Tai Chi is just this kind of pretty, you know, soft, you know, wave hands thing. And, you know, but yet they get into a class and they find that they have to, you know, actually learn how to, you know, reconnect their body, how to breathe, how to do these, you know, these more, you know, maybe challenging things. And I just feel that if we as Tai Chi teachers could actually take the opportunity to really use the media as a way of educating people about what Tai Chi is, that it would actually be, you know, a much better service to our particular art. You know, and I think for me it's a cascade in our culture where, you know, we're really training ourselves to not go deep, you know, just, oh, I'm going to try this and I'm going to try that. But, you know, Tai Chi is one of these things where you can actually, if we could tell people, hey, this is a really beautiful method, but, you know, it's also physical exercise, it's mental exercise, it's going to take some time to learn it, you know, then not only are they going to have an opportunity to learn an art, but they're going to have an opportunity to be inspired to a way of life that will offer huge health and mental benefits. So this is really where I take issue with, you know, kind of Tai Chi light advertising, you know, and you know, so this is really, really my issue is why, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, yoga, for example, does not advertise itself like, oh, if you can, you know, reach your arm forward, then you can do yoga.
Right.
Yet yoga, right? Yet yoga is hugely popular. So I don't think that Tai Chi and Qigong teachers have to be afraid to really state some of the depth that is available to people within the art. I think people want that depth. I think people want a sense of connection and challenge and interconnectedness and all of those things that Tai Chi offers, in addition to, you know, a martial art and beautiful thing, you know, to practice and so on. So this is really where it finally just got to me that really we have to use media to educate people. And, you know, I understand the point about trying to make something accessible, but why not make it accessible in a way that is more accurate?
Right.
You know, Tai Chi doesn't have anything to do with, you know, waving hands or, you know, orange uniforms with dogs. You know, I would rather, yeah, right? You know, I would rather have, you know, personally, I would rather say, you know, if you can, you know, stand still or sit still for, you know, 5 minutes, you can do Tai Chi. You know, I mean,
right.
But I understand. I mean, and I don't fault, you know, any of us for trying to get this art out there. I mean, yoga, for example, did get a jump start on us, and I think that Asian arts are maybe challenging for people to really understand because our two cultures are so very different. You know, the American Western mind isn't used to something that's going to take, you know, 1 to 3 years to learn the basics well. You know,
right.
We're used to, you know, 1 to 3 weeks, you know, and if we can't do that, then, you know, move on. But it's really missing the whole point.
All right. So that was the one of the clips that I had pulled from our interview yesterday evening. So I just want to use that clip to kind of open the discussion. What do our guests feel about the way she feels that Tai Chi, or let's just call it internal arts in general, because, you know, there's not only Tai Chi, there's like Lu Ha Ba Fa, and, you know, Ba Gua Zhang, all the internal arts, even Qigong. You know, how do you guys feel that internal arts are marketed or should be marketed? Should we actually market internal arts as martial art if we're going to be teaching, you know, a martial art aspect of the art? So what are your thoughts? Who wants to go first?
I'll speak for it. Okay. Mobley. I introduce Tai Chi to people, and I always explain to them first and foremost that it is a martial art. And the benefits that are derived, that were discovered in this art, are very healing, and it's very beneficial for your survival, for your health. And so a lot of people are attracted to it for that reason, especially people that are sickly and old. Another thing about the art is that it's known to increase balance, stability. So a lot of elderly people are attracted to it for that reason, because a lot of elderly people are scared of falling and breaking bones. So it's got this popularity as a health maintenance type of, you know, fitness thing. But first and foremost, I want my students to understand that it is a martial art. The main reason being is because the movements that we are practicing are martial moves. You really want to understand how the energy is flowing, you need to understand the martial movement. I think it's very important that it needs to be brought to the forefront that it is a martial art. And I think a lot of people shy away from Tai Chi because they don't recognize it as a martial art. And they don't recognize the benefits as a martial art, how it centers your body and makes you more of a better martial artist or combative person, if you have to go into combat, because you're dealing with your central energy and centering movement. So it's hard for people to look at it and see it like that, but that's what I think needs to be brought to the front about this art. The health benefits I believe they're all beautiful, and I believe people need to be attracted to Tai Chi for the health benefits. But first and foremost, everyone needs to understand that this is a martial art, and it's like one of the best martial arts in the world.
That's an interesting viewpoint that some, because you mentioned that some people shy away from Tai Chi because they might feel that it is a martial art. That's interesting. That's interesting. Comments from anybody else?
Yeah, I was. This is Carl, and I was thinking that it's a very interesting, almost a dilemma that those of us who teach Tai Chi have found ourselves in, because of the way, I think as Kim alluded to, because of the way it has frequently been presented to the general public and in the media, you know, as this kind of slow motion, just movement thing that anyone can do, and doesn't really require any effort and very little training, and it's just seemed as something that's presented as something that's so easy. Now, any of us who have done Tai Chi for even 2 minutes can tell you that Tai Chi is not easy. with great skill and lots of practice, we can make it look easier and very flowing and very fluid and very beautiful. But in order to make it look like that, we all know how many years we had to practice in order to acquire any level of skill at all. Tai Chi is an extremely dynamic and deep and complex art. Now, on the other hand, as you were just saying, some people, I've had people call me and say, oh, I want to learn Tai Chi. I don't want to learn a martial art, but I want to learn Tai Chi. And like you, Sifu Mobley, I always tell people, number one, Tai Chi is a martial art. Get over it. This is a martial art. And even though we may be emphasizing, you know, the health benefits and the benefits of mental and emotional self-regulation and some of the other aspects of the art, every movement in Tai Chi has multiple levels of martial meaning. Mm-hmm. And the art was created in the beginning as a martial art. And over the years, the other benefits became so prominent and obvious that has, in many cases, taken precedent. But we can never, ever forget the origin of our art and in fact that every single movement we're doing in Tai Chi has multiple levels of martial application. And that's one of the beauties, I think, of Tai Chi, is that it offers so many different things to so many different people with different levels of needs. You know, I've taught the art in nursing homes to patients with Alzheimer's disease who are unable to get out of wheelchairs. I've also taught, you know, young people, you know, who use it for tournament competition. And in between that gulf, between those two audiences, I think one of the incredible aspects of Tai Chi is that it offers so much to so many. And can be tailored to meet the needs of almost any group of individuals.
Sifu Carl, can I ask you a question, please, sir?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Now, I'm getting your feeling about, for the lack of a better word, it's been dumbed down to the general populace, okay?
Yes.
Do you think, because I've seen Sifu Rastita do a Tai Chi form, and I can see the martial application because the emphasis on some techniques that she uses. Do you think that the application or the teachings of the application have been lost in today's society or watered down or taken a different direction?
In many cases, yes. In other cases, no. I think it really depends on how much information and knowledge in that particular area that the instructor has. I certainly have met Tai Chi instructors and have observed other Tai Chi instructors who apparently, or even by their own admission, have little or no knowledge and skill in the martial aspects of Tai Chi. You know, they strictly learned it as a form of
moving meditation and moving health art, and they never really were exposed to the application levels of Tai Chi, or perhaps their only exposure was push hands and no further. And so I think it really depends. And then, of course, I've been to other places where the martial aspects were clearly evident, and that was, in fact, the emphasis of the teaching was on Tai Chi as a martial art, either as in terms of self-defense or in terms of a tournament competition level practice.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is David Dorian.
I was going to ask if you wanted to comment, please.
No, I absolutely.
Yes.
First of all, I'm so touched that Kim remembers me so fondly. She was a brilliant student. I can't say enough about her. Tai Chi is just extraordinary. She went to China and is now a disciple of Chen Xiaolong, and gosh, she's just gone so far.
Yeah, she spoke so highly of you before I figured out how to record the soundbite that I wanted to record. I'm like, yeah, let's talk, and I'll figure this out. And she's like, yeah, about 27, 28 years ago, he was my first Tai Chi instructor, wonderful, wonderful man, and she holds so much respect for you. So yeah,
I'm just touched that she doesn't remember all the terrible things I did to her as a student. So
lower horse stance.
a brilliant conversation. I'm so glad that you guys are hosting this show, and I want to make sure that I'm speaking like apples to apples with the conversation, because I think that
right.
this is what happens when a bunch of martial artists get together. You know the joke about how many Tai Chi teachers it takes to screw in a light bulb?
I haven't heard the answer, but what?
It takes 10. One guy screwing the light bulb and 9 stands around going, well, you could do it like that, but in our school...
I thought that was just an Iaido joke.
apples to apples. And I'm going to throw up my hand and say, yeah, I am absolutely responsible for this statement that came out, although it looks like somebody sent it to Kim a little bit out of context.
Mm-hmm.
On the recent PBS show, I said, if you can wave your hands, you can do Tai Chi, which is, to my core, absolutely accurate. Because
mm-hmm.
what's the opposite? If you can't wave your hands, maybe you're going to have some difficulty doing Tai Chi, although I teach on, imagine yourself as the armless Tai Chi master. Then how are you going to move your waist? But
right.
the context of this was that probably more than any other question, more so than do I have to learn a martial art or is it going to be difficult or going to be – like. I would love to do Tai Chi with you, but I'm not coordinated.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like people going, I'd love to do yoga, but I'm not very flexible.
Right, right.
Like, yes, that's the point. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Tai Chi is, for me, has always been, since the first day of my first class, the absolute coolest thing ever invented by a human being. It is so amazing that,
mm-hmm.
I spend my life. I'm the chi evangelist, right? I spend my life just
I love that.
With other people. That's my and so what people are experiencing in the mainstream is some kind of apprehension, some kind of a cultural point of view that
mm-hmm.
Tai Chi is too esoteric, it's too difficult. That you
right.
have to do it for years before you ever got to a point where anything, would happen, and I'm sorry, I can't wait that long.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, in contrast to that, let's experience something that's actually going to make you better about it, going to make you excited to do it, and that
mm-hmm.
is if you can, lift your hand up, now turn your waist with me, now drop that hand. No, right, drop those shoulders, be a little bit more relaxed. How about a smile on your face? Guess what? That's called waving hands like clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And piece by piece in the show, I led people into shifting their weight. I led people into getting their alignment. But it was a process of discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
mm-hmm.
is what getting, that I'm trying to share with people is that, if you make too high a barrier for people to jump over,
then they may never get to the place where you can start to educate them about the deeper and more wonderful levels of what you have to share.
Exactly.
Right? And if that's your intention, if you like, and I know a lot of my Kung Fu brothers and sisters who are like, I've studied this whole thing my whole life. This is now my passion to teach people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you got to get them in the door first.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That's my point. And that's what I'm trying to do is create a new branding for Tai Chi that gets people in the door so that our schools are filled with students who are like, okay, I know there's got to be more. Lay it on me.
Exactly. And as I was going through this interview with Kimberly, I realized, there had to be something more to this advertisement. But in context, to look at the ad the way it was, I haven't seen it. But just to see the words, if you can wave your hands, you can do Tai Chi. You're right. That will get people in the door. And at that point, as teachers, it's up to us to lead them to the understanding of what Tai Chi is, that kind of thing. So,
and I think we're
wonderful.
Fully capable of doing it. I don't think that, once you have a student in front of you, I'm fully confident that, anyone on this panel today could see them where they're at, could take them for who they are in this moment. And say, okay, now I can say what you need is, you don't need a whole lot of, full contact fighting, because you're 65 and you've got a broken hip. But maybe this would be good for you, so I'll take you in that direction. And you got a 20-year-old that comes in and says, I fight all the time. I said, well, great, let me teach you how to use your martial vigor and internalize it and become a more balanced and centered individual. I mean, that's
exactly.
Up to us once we get them in the door.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Sifu Viola, your thoughts, please.
Hey.
Yay.
Yeah, I am really enjoying the conversation, and I've had some pretty strong ideas about this for a long time, and seeing how the media tends to characterize Tai Chi as just an exercise for old people, and I hear that repeated again and again and again. Tai Chi is good to improve your balance. Well, yes, that's true. Tai Chi can help people suffering from Parkinson's or diabetes or shingles, and the list is getting longer and longer and longer by the day. And yet the information that's out there about how it can help youth in improving their school studies and becoming better athletes and reducing their stress. And, there's a lot of conversation about kids and the drugs they use and the problems with pharmaceuticals and ADD and all these things. And I know that studies have come out about kids and their teens and the difficulties they face just in our society and all the stress. And I would love to see high schools incorporating Tai Chi into a physical program, and yet a lot of physical programs have been cut because of budgets.
Yeah.
And there was an article I read not that long ago about an experimental school, I think it's in Canada, who started introducing Tai Chi for grade school kids and just having them have a moment of silence in the morning and moving together in the morning before they went into their studies, and what a dramatic difference they found in the students' ability to focus and their collaboration, the relationships with one another. It was remarkable.
Yeah.
And so just looking at how it's perceived in the public as something that's for old people and really wanting to see a shift in that as well is that, if you have joints in your body, it's an exercise for you.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a I almost forgot about that study in Canada because I actually teach at the Morningside Academy downtown Seattle, and it's they use a teaching method called the Morningside Method. And the Morningside Academy is a school that specializes in I can't go into how they teach. It's a special method that helps anyone from kids that are not doing well in public school to kids with autism, Asperger's syndrome, ADD, ADHD, dyslexia, other learning disabilities, you know, even slight mental disabilities, you know, that kind of thing. And I came on about, I'd say maybe about 14 years ago, as specifically a wushu instructor to get them to move because they didn't have PE. I was their PE. And then about 10 years ago, I decided, you know, I think I'm gonna pepper this with Tai Chi. And I brought this up with the principal, and, you know, she wondered, well, you know, how's that gonna work? How do you think that's going to work, you know, with some of these kids with ADD, ADHD, that kind of thing? And I said, it all depends on how it's presented. So I experimented for 10 years. And you're right that Tai Chi, same as what the Canadian school had found, the Tai Chi, you know, most people would think, oh, the ADD kids are not going to be able to stand in standing post for 5 minutes. Are you kidding? You know, they're going to want to move around. But if you give them something to focus on, something, you know, and if you allow them to experience Tai Chi or Qigong in a way that they're familiar with, then they see it as not something that Sifu told me to do, but something that, I want to see if I can do this. It becomes a challenge to them that they actually feel motivated to do. And every morning I get, Sifu, you know, what are we doing for Tai Chi today? Or what are we doing for Wushu today? And it's like, whoa, I better think of something quick.
Yeah.
At that point. Because it is a great thing, and I'm a big supporter in the internal arts being introduced to the bigger audience of the younger people as opposed to the general public having the idea that it's only for people that go to it just because they can't do anything else, that kind of thing. So, yeah, great. And, you know, this kind of leads into what Sifu Carl was talking about just a little bit ago. Sifu Carl, you said that Tai Chi is different things to different people for different reasons. And and also David had mentioned that, there's this piece of advertisement, but it gets led into what Tai Chi really is, that it is more than just waving your hands. So what I did was I asked Kim about advertising. I said, you know, do you feel that advertising is more so geared toward specific demographic groups? Because there's like a lot of ads out there. You know, I have seen ads that are for, you know, the older set. I've seen ads that are for fitness. I've seen ads for stress relief. You know, all these particular ways of bringing Tai Chi to the public eye. So I wonder if some of the marketing is based on targeting demographics. So I'd like to play another clip for you. This is about a 6.5-minute clip from the same interview that I did with Kim Ivey, and here it is. So do you kind of feel that some of the advertising out there, whether good or bad, do you think it probably targets specific demographics, like, for example, the Celebrex commercial? Do you feel that it specifically targets, you know, just the elderly population, or other ads might attract maybe just the new agey population, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
I've personally yet to see a print ad or anything on TV or radio that touts it as a martial art. So, you know, I think that niche is missing in a lot of the advertising that I've seen. But do you feel that some of this advertising is maybe just geared to specific demographics?
Well, I do, and I think part of that, interestingly enough, is that I think it was maybe 15 years ago that study came out about Tai Chi being really the best thing for balance.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the studies that they're doing, and I've been a part of a couple of these studies, actually, that they're really targeting people maybe over 70 years old in these studies. There's only one study that I know of that actually targeted people between, I think, the ages of 18 and 70. And so part of this problem is that in the Western scientific model, the only studies that have been done have been in the quote-unquote elderly population. Mm-hmm. And what I really feel, and they're showing great benefits. I mean, they really have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that among absolutely everything, Tai Chi is it as regards to balance. There's just not a shadow of a doubt. There's been study after study after study. But the issue that I see is they're emphasizing too much on the population of people over 70, and they're not stating the things that create good balance in that population, mm-hmm. relaxing the hip, having correct knee alignment, more awareness, you know, relaxation, breathing, are the exact things that create good balance and health in any age group.
Exactly.
I mean, you teach kids, they're... You know, there's this myth that if you're under 15, then you can do everything. That's not true. Some of the worst balance mm-hmm. I've seen is in kids. They have to be taught, right? And so mm-hmm. I really feel that a lot of these issues, they're just not stating, you know, gee, the things that work for people over 70 to reduce their blood pressure and cholesterol, you know, are the things that work for the person in their 30s. And mm-hmm. so this is why I think a lot of these ads are targeting this, you know, older population. And I think that they're really, really missing the boat. There was only one ad, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, and I don't even think that it was from the United States. There was this beautiful, beautiful Chen practitioner doing Chen Tai Chi, gorgeous, in an office setting. I think it was in Asia or something, an Asian company. And it was about, you know, integrating, you know, kind of meditative fitness into your daily work routine. And he was in a business suit. He was probably 40. He had fantastic form. And that, I thought, oh, well, why not, you know?
Right.
But, of course, I never saw that ad again. So, anyway, I think that a lot of it has to do with what studies, you know, unfortunately, Tai Chi is kind of, as it breaks, and it's not just in the United States. I mean, Tai Chi for, you know, is changing also in China because the kids are getting more involved with, you know, wanting to make money and, you know,
right.
It's the same cultural problems that we have here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do agree with you. I do agree that most marketing is for, you know, as we said earlier, you know, when our students say, well, I'll do Tai Chi when I'm older, we say, well, you better start now so you
now.
Can do it when you're older.
Exactly.
Right.
But I bet it was really cool for you, though, you know, going to Chenjiago and seeing, I'm sure you saw kids practicing Tai Chi there when you were in Chenjiago, right?
They start when they're 3.
Yeah,
they start when
cool
they're 3, and it's just amazing. One of the best things about going to that village, you know, of 2,000 people is, you know, really 95, and it's true, it's not a myth, 95% of the people practice Tai Chi, and, you know, they start when they're 3, and they end when they're in the grave, and it's just, you know, it's not anything. They don't think, oh, this is something special, I have to go practice, I have to do this. No, they just... You know, I'm going to brush my teeth, I'm going to do standing meditation, I'm going to work in the farm, I'm going to do my Tai Chi at lunch, and, you know, but of course then there's people that train to be competitors and teachers and do it more athletically, but, you know, you see it for all ages, and also it's really interesting, they also really bring Tai Chi training into their special needs population, just like
cool.
anywhere. This is really fascinating, just like anywhere. You know, Tai Chi, they have people with mild Down syndrome, autism, maybe they have some birth defect or something like that. And, you know, in contrast to what we do, kind of relegate, you know, maybe to a home, these folks are right in the community doing Tai Chi, and they really know that Tai Chi really not only helps the individual that may have some of these issues, but most importantly, they integrate into the community, so there's not a sense of separation. So Tai Chi is not only this martial athletic art, it's also the way that the community connects together. It's really quite beautiful.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, and you don't see that advertising. I like to see the advertising. Yeah, Tai Chi is a way of making your relationships better. You know, Tai Chi is a, you know, I mean, those of us who run schools really get that, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is what kind of bugs me about some of this advertising, and it does go to the heart of what I feel our culture, you know, it's just too superficial. You know, we aren't training ourselves to go deep, and we really need to go deep. you know, into ourselves, and Tai Chi is really one of those pathways.
Bravo.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, what Kim said about it being too superficial, you know, I have my issues with that, and that in order for Tai Chi to be accessible, it has to be dumbed down for the public. And, you know, the big Tai Chi symposium that was held back in, I think it was Tennessee a couple years back, where all the five masters of the different styles got together, and they decided to make Tai Chi more accessible. It was important to create short forms, you know, so let's create a 16-movement form out of each of our styles. And now, if we could break Tai Chi down into one movement, what would that be? And I struggle with this myself in getting people interested in Tai Chi, like you were saying, David, you know, getting them in the door, and then they can start to explore it for themselves and realize the depth of it. And that's one thing that my teacher, Grandmaster Chen Chenglei, was saying, that sure, there are a lot of people out there who are teaching who might not necessarily be conveying the martial aspect of it, but once people experience Tai Chi, when they look to the deeper levels, really they're going to be going to the people who can provide that to them and finding the depth of the art.
I couldn't agree more. That's really it's a kind of a catch-22. It is a paradox. You know, when we made the recent PBS show, it was kind of a struggle because the producers and the underwriters of the show were basically afraid. Their research said that a show that was too deep, that was too much into some of the, you know, deeper teachings or, you know, more philosophical portions of the show would not be well received, would not get high enough ratings, would not be well enough watched, would be you know, too expensive, basically. You know, if you don't have enough viewers, then you've thrown your money away. To allow the first couple of scripts that I presented to them to go forward. And they really wanted to emphasize, now we want more how-to. We want your talk to be open exercise benefits. And I'm like, I'm happy to do that because that's an intrinsic part of it, but there is so much more. So it was kind of like, you know, a job to get as much of the depth and philosophy into the script as possible. And I think this is where we are culturally. I think this is actually to Kim's point that she was making, that where we are culturally in America right now is way, way behind where we are culturally in China or anywhere in Asia, that people don't really know diddly about Tai Chi if you're talking about the general public. And the first job we have to do is get a certain level of awareness that Tai Chi exists, that it's good for you, and that it's really cool stuff. By the way, I'm really having a hard time not. You know, that there's really, really cool stuff about Tai Chi, and before we get to that level of just awareness, it's going to be difficult to get into some of the deeper stuff. You know, it's not that we want to come down Tai Chi in any way, but if you come out of the gate talking about some of the more esoteric portions of it that we know so well, most of the people you talk to will not know what you're speaking about.
Yeah, and in fact, it might scare them away. Some
people, might scare them away.
You know, consider, okay, I want to do this for exercise, and I want to spend an hour of it on it once a week, and then go do the rest of my life in my busyness. And so to get into the deeper levels right away freaks some people out. It's like, wait, I just wanted to take an exercise class. You know what, this is a lifetime commitment?
Right.
It freaks them out.
Right. In the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu says, when nine people hear of the Tao, three people will follow it day and night. Three people will do it every now and then, and three people will laugh at you. But if there were no laughing at you, it wouldn't be the Tao.
That was great.
Very
nice. True.
Yeah.
Very true. This is Carl. By the way, I just love all these comments, and I think Kim made some really, really important points throughout. I'd like to meet her someday. She sounds great. But I always tell everybody, whether they're coming in for Tai Chi or Kung Fu or Chinese Kenpo, you know, whatever it is they come in with, whatever their reasons are, is that number one, even if they're coming in for an more external martial art or for Tai Chi or anything else, number one, the most important, I think, gift that the arts can provide is health, because we all need that every minute of our lives. And without that, the quality of our lives is compromised severely. And so everybody, I think, can relate to that. Now, part of good health involves good the ability to focus our thoughts and have a coherent sense of cognition. So mental, cognitive and mental health, part of it is learning how to do emotional self-regulation, which is important for our relationships and for our self-esteem and our ability to engage in life in a responsible manner. Part of that is self-defense, because it's extremely unhealthy if you allow somebody to beat you up and, you know, hit you over the head with the iron club. I can think of things more unhealthy than that. part of that is getting our energetic life in balance, you know, through the qigong aspect of the arts, and that, of course, is a whole another very deep domain that you know, as the student goes on, they will learn more about. And then ultimately, of course, there's even, meant for many of us, there's a deep spiritual component to Tai Chi, which comes from the mindfulness aspect and this unification of mind and body and breath in a mindful manner, which deepens our ability to appreciate life itself. And deepens our ability to relate to each other in significant ways. And so all of these things, you know, that many people will not have the first clue about when they first begin Tai Chi, it becomes evident the longer that they participate. Right. And so Tai Chi is like the tip of the iceberg is peeking out from the surface, but underneath is so much more.
Right. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got a caller from area code 510. 510, thanks for calling the Dynamic Dojo.
Hello, my name is Alonzo Young, and I'm really happy to hear what Sifu Carl Totten just spoke of, because that was what I was going to talk about, is that the idea of marketing Tai Chi and its mindfulness practices is really key. And I think at this point in time, at least in Northern California, at this point in time, everyone's following, you know, how to be more mindful and how that mindfulness relates to all types of relationships across the board. As well as, you know, if we look at, I always wonder, like yoga, very popular to a wide variety of audience, and that Tai Chi doesn't have that same type of following. So, and it does the same thing. So, you know, I'd like to maybe have some response to how the marketing for Tai Chi is different than yoga, and how that can be changed.
Can I speak
That's
on that?
That's a great question. Yes, please.
This is John Mobley. What I realized about the yoga, the whole yoga movement, it like back in the flower child days of the 60s, there was such a great interest in the philosophy of India. And along with that philosophy came the introduction of yoga. And there has been quite a movement in that direction in the States from like the late 50s to 60s and on. And Tai Chi itself didn't have popularity. It doesn't have that type of following where there's a whole mystical or spiritual involvement that if you want to be submissive to. And I think a lot of people, they want to be submissive to something higher than themselves. Whereas in Tai Chi, we don't really have anything like that. Matter of fact, Tai Chi is really about understanding yourself and centering yourself, and all everything you need to know is within you. You know, it's about balancing with nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it is said that Tai Chi is an art that attracts intellectual people.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much the people who are not knowing and seeking, but people who can see and know. And I think in our society, there's not a whole lot of people who can see and know. So therefore, we don't have a great following. But the thing about Tai Chi and yoga, if you really understand what yoga does for the body and what Tai Chi does for the body, yes, they do the same things. But Tai Chi actually does more. Tai Chi, you know, there are three exercises in the world where the muscles, every muscle in the body is used. And one is swimming, the other is yoga, and then the next is Tai Chi Chi Kung.
Mm-hmm.
These exercises have, one is better than the other. You can line them up according to which one is better. The worst one for you is swimming because it has a lot of ways. You can get sick, you can drown, you can die, you can catch diseases. That's the worst one. But it's a great exercise for all the muscles of the body. Then yoga is very good exercise for the spirit, the mind, the body, the whole nine yards. Only thing about yoga compared to Tai Chi is that yoga is stagnant. And Tai Chi is meditation and movement, which is energizing the body and increasing the body's health and so forth, as we've already spoken on. So the benefits of Tai Chi are greater than yoga, but people, they don't understand, they don't have a submissive mind for yoga, for Tai Chi like they do for yoga. And I don't know... what is a great way to try and change that view? Only thing I keep thinking of is demonstrations.
May I speak to that?
Sure, go ahead.
Yes.
Because, you know, the idea of the submissive mind versus the intellectual mind in Tai Chi or yoga, my exploration of Tai Chi, I've been studying Tai Chi now since 1978, and it is a spiritual it can be a spiritual practice depending on how long you've practiced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an idea of spiritualism or intellectualism. It's an idea of practice. And if I understand everything that everyone said up to this point, the deeper we go, the more we get out of the practice itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very true.
And unfortunately, what I've seen as a marketing perspective is that it is so heavily marketed as a martial art, every book that you get, you start off and you talk about, most of the books, magazines, briefly mention the spiritual component, briefly mention the mindfulness of Tai Chi and the benefits overall across the board, and then immediately jump into the physical component. And I think that's a component that we're missing as far as marketing Tai Chi, that to talk about the mindfulness component, to have the research that, and there's research out there that speaks how Tai Chi as a mindful practice can benefit the whole person as a holistic practice.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. Yeah, I didn't really mean that it was not a spiritual practice, because I know the whole person does develop in Tai Chi, which means the spirit also. But I just meant it wasn't a spiritual practice that we have to bow down to a Buddha or to a Christ, or that we're, you know, dealing with that type of order. That's all I meant by that.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and, you know, and that's a whole different discussion. And, you know, it's not in, like, and to, just to clarify, yoga is not bowing down to Buddha. It's the internal person.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we miss the symbolism to actually what is the practice about. It's about ourselves.
Yes,
it is about ourselves, and so if we focus much on the thing or the object that we really miss. You know, I guess Bruce Lee says it best. If we point, if we watch the finger, then we miss the moon.
Right.
Yes.
Actually, it's really interesting. This is David Dorian. A really interesting comparison between yoga and Tai Chi that makes for a lovely discussion. Both yoga and Tai Chi are focused on the same goal. You know, what we think of when we talk about modern yoga, most of the time people are just talking about one aspect of yoga, which is hatha yoga, you know, doing the physical routines and the asanas and whatever.
Right.
But the deeper practice is based on Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which says that it is a process leading to one particular thing, and that is unification with the absolute, samadhi.
Yeah.
Get to samadhi, and then you can just stop worrying about everything else because, you know, you got it.
Right.
And in the same way, what Steve Mobley was saying, you know, that Tai Chi also has this deepest intent, you know, of internal thing, of getting to know yourself better, of, you know, who are we really fighting as a martial artist, you know, in Tai Chi? Only that shadow side of ourselves. Right, that is the most difficult opponent we could ever face, and so you know they both, you know, it's about methodology, not necessarily intention. You know, what is the methodology? And frankly, people like who will never love Tai Chi as much as I do, and God bless them. They don't need to. If yoga speaks to them and says, through that practice, you can achieve that sense of you know, return to authenticity, to the authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Then I give you whatever blessing that's in my power to give.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I'm a clinical psychologist. This is Carl also. And so I'm, of course, very sensitive to the psychological and emotional benefits which come from the practice of really any type of practice that helps to link the mind, the body, and the breath with a sense of mindfulness. You know, whether it's yoga or Tai Chi or any other practice that exists out there, I think these are to be encouraged because discipline, the disciplined practice of anything which has those components will lead to, I think, outstanding results. And it's to be encouraged, I think, in this society where I think too often now because people are so easily distracted with the mass media, with video games and with television and just other things, they aren't working on cultivation necessarily any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And these arts offer such rich sources of internal spiritual and mental and emotional and physical and energetic nourishment. And we need that. We desperately need that as a society.
Sifu Kim.
Agreed.
Actually, Kim Ivey actually wrote a brilliant blog about this a few years ago. I sent a bunch of my people to her website to read this blog. It's called The First 10,000 Times Don't Count. It's really a great paper. I'm sending you to her website, Embrace the Moon, so you can read it because it's really wonderful. That you know, have what Sifu Carl was talking about, that sense of discipline and depth and linking is only through practice.
Yes.
You know, as a clinical psychologist, you know, I'm sure you appreciate that. The real benefit comes from rehearsal. There's no magic.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
No magic. You know, I'm doing Tai Chi now. Ooh, you're imbued with magic. No. It's, you know, 10,001 times. That's the magic.
It's funny, though, because, like, somehow, some way, you know, there are people out there that do believe that, oh, if I get into this Tai Chi class, I'm going to be like one big chi ball or, you know, or something like that. And I don't know where it comes from. You know, I don't know where that stereotype comes from that, you know, that like David says, oh, you're imbued with magic. You know? I don't know where it comes from. It has to come from, I don't know where the stereotype comes from. So it's like weird.
I worry less about that student who comes in and says, oh, I'm going to do Tai Chi now. Will I have magic? I worry less about them than the Tai Chi practitioner who's been in it for 10 years who still thinks that there's magic somewhere.
that's a danger right there.
I don't think I've met that person.
Yeah.
I only have 10 years. They've figured it out.
Yeah.
Oh, this, but, you know, 3 years, maybe that would be more like it. Takes 3 years to figure out that you're actually doing something, and then go, oh, dang.
Yeah.
Work.
Wow, this is work. Yeah, and that's the thing. I've actually had people quit my classes because they said this to me. They didn't know it was going to be that much work.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of made me wonder, you know, are you paying me to have you not do work? That's fine.
You're their motivation, Restita.
Yeah, I get, well, you know, and again, I guess it all goes to, it is kind of like a way of advertising. I mean, you know, in a way, somehow, some way, you know, whatever they're seeing or hearing, they figure, I need to go out and do something. So they go out to the gym or to one of our Tai Chi schools or to a MMA school, and they go, okay, I should keep healthy. I need to do this. But then the stereotype, they might have a preconception of Tai Chi or internal arts or a stereotype, and they come in with this expectation. And then when they see it not happening and they're wondering why their legs hurt, why are my legs sore? Why am I in this horse riding stance? And why are my arms up for so long? Or why am I just standing here? You know, then it becomes hard. And I've actually had people, you know, have to, you know, take their exit interview and then, you know, can you tell me why you want to quit? Well, it's because it wasn't, you know, it didn't know it was going to be that hard. And, yeah, so I still wonder about that. It's kind of weird. Oh, where's the fire?
Oh, my ride's here.
I was looking out the window, too. I'm like, but they're not supposed to come get me until 8. Yeah. All right. Just to remind our listeners here that, wow, that's quite a fire. Our phone number here for our listeners is 347-677-0699. We have about, a little less than 30 minutes left in our show. So if you'd like to call in or have any questions, please feel free. And our previous caller is still on the line. Your mic is still open. We're going to go ahead and keep you on in case you want to continue to comment.
This is Carl. Let me give a shout-out to our listener there, Alonzo. Hi, Alonzo.
Mm-hmm.
He's an old friend and a student of mine. We've known each other forever. And just want to say hello and thank you for calling in, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
All right, we'll have Alonzo up on the line here for joining us as well. So 347-677-0699. I want to also kind of get into the subject and the time that we have left about what I was talking about a little bit earlier. You know, some of the misconceptions that might that could be actually to our advantage or to our disadvantage. And I asked Kim this question, you know, what she felt the most popular, I guess, misconceptions are. And so here's our little 5-minute clip about that question. So Sifu Kim, what would you feel would be some of the big misconceptions that the general public has about Tai Chi?
Well, I think about Tai Chi. Yeah, I think there's two. I think there's two misconceptions. One is that Tai Chi is easy. And two, that Tai Chi is hard. I think those are the two general misconceptions. You know, I think that as far as martial artists and maybe people who are really athletic are concerned, they think that Tai Chi is too easy for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that maybe people, you know, who have not done any exercise and aren't used to being in their body, they think that maybe Tai Chi is too hard for them. But I think actually it's kind of like our Taoist philosophy tells us, between the opposites lies the path. You know, really, Tai Chi is not easy. Tai Chi is not hard. I mean, I remember talking to my teacher, Chen Xiaowang, about this, and he said, you know, don't tell your students Tai Chi is hard because it will discourage them. But don't tell them that it is easy, because then they won't pay attention. Tell them that Tai Chi is deep, and then that will inspire them.
Totally.
And that was really wonderful to me. And then Chen Xiaowang's brother and also one of my teachers, I asked him one time, I said, do you find after, you know, 55 years of practice that your Tai Chi is still difficult? And he said, you know, really, if you want easy Tai Chi, Tai Chi is easy. If you want deep Tai Chi is a little less easy, a little bit more, you know, challenging. You know, one of my friends, Betty Dong, who teaches down in Arizona, she put out a great new promo, and she said, Tai Chi, the challenging exercise for people of all ages. And I thought, you know, this really what we're – isn't that great? You
That's
know, it's
cool.
really what we're – yeah, it's really what we're looking for. You know, we don't have to be afraid of challenge. We don't have to be afraid of – wrestling around with our body and our mind and trying to learn something new and figure something out. I mean, this is what keeps us alive, and we're all going to live to be in our 90s now. You know, I mean, the days of, you know, of health are really here. And so if we can, again, if we can really shift, it's not about the art in an objective way per se, but it's about how we approach it. And if we could really just approach it with that challenge, like, God, this is something fantastic I'll be able to do, you know, for the rest of my life, and now I'm just going to take my time and learn the basics, you know, learn the fundamentals step by step, you know, gradually. Chen Xiaopei always talked about learning Tai Chi gradually, and there's so much joy and pleasure in that. So, you know, Tai Chi, I think it goes to the heart of this, you know, kind of this dualistic mind that we kind of get trained in our culture. Oh, something's easy, so I'm going to do it really fast and be done with it. Or something's hard,
right,
so I won't do it at all. To really get rid of that mindset altogether and just, you know, just sink in and, you know, really learn something. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, what else are we doing, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I think those are the two kind of overarching myths. And they don't really have anything to do with just digging in and having a good time. And, you know, and then in the meantime, you know, maybe you study Tai Chi for, you know, 1 or 5 years. And I was talking to a colleague of mine, and he's a Tai Chi teacher, and he's off of his cholesterol meds, and he doesn't have to have a knee replacement. And, you know, he's been doing Tai Chi for 25 years. You know, gradually, you know, we improve.
Well, I cut that off a little too early. It's it ended with gradually, we improve. So that was Sifu Kim's thoughts on common misconceptions about Tai Chi that could make its way into advertising, or not necessarily just advertising. I don't want this show to be just about advertising, but just about, you know, the perception of internal arts as a whole. So what do you guys feel would be some misconceptions? In fact, I'm going to ask Bob, because, Robert, you're an primarily external martial artist. And although I'm a firm believer that all martial arts both have the hard and the soft, you know, the deep, you know, as well as the physical, what are some things that you've heard of Tai Chi as you were coming up through the arts?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, Sifu, because I was always, you know, I was exposed to the Parks and Rec aspect of it, where a Tai Chi instructor would be hired by the city to come in and teach at the local park. And the misconception I had was as an observer that there was an instructor that taught the forms, taught the movements, never taught application of it, any martial aspects of Tai Chi at all. And there were so many out there that did this that particular way that the misconception was, this isn't really a martial art. There is no martial application within it because it's not taught. Like the question I asked Sifu Tan, that it's not that it's not there, it's that they didn't learn it that way. It's like when that person came into your school and wanted to be a Tai Chi teacher.
All right.
And she had a weekend camp.
Mm-hmm.
So she couldn't even know the basics. She couldn't know the movement correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had two days of Tai Chi, and now she's labeled as an instructor.
Yeah.
That was, you'll have to excuse my language, what a load of crap. You know?
Hey,
but I do want to
broke the seal, now I can swear. Okay, great.
What's that?
So he broke the seal, now I can swear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I want to ask the panel, because we have 100 years of Tai Chi experience here, and everybody's opinion is like fingerprints. Everybody has one, and they're all different. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, especially now, I don't know. I know Sifu Totten has been training for well over 40 years. David has been training, you know, 30, 40 years as well. What is the difference? Because it's been marketed the same way as long as I can physically remember, at least 30 years, about being for the elderly, for the ill. What is the difference today between how it was marketed when you were coming up in the art, and what drew you to Tai Chi?
Well, okay, this is Carl. Let me answer that by saying when I started, actually, this is my 50th year in the Chinese arts.
Woo.
I'm celebrating number 50 this year, 2013.
Wow.
It makes me feel
old.
When I feel so young. I feel so young. But when I was coming up, I looked forward to being able to study Tai Chi and Qigong because I was taught by my teachers, my Kung Fu and other type of teachers, that this was actually the most advanced or more advanced aspects of the arts. And so I was looking forward to being able to take this really deep, mysterious, advanced level of practice. And I jumped at the opportunity to begin learning it. So that was my initial introduction to it, which perhaps, of course, might be quite different than the general public.
I guess we'll find out here in a second.
Right.
Who wants to answer next?
Okay, I guess I'll speak next because I was just about to ask if that was put to all of us.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Sifu Jia Min Mobley, master of the 24th kick form. For me, I started Tai Chi as a back in 1972, so it's been like 40 years for me. And my was brought to me. I was made aware of Tai Chi by my mother, and my mother was on. She was one of the first people in the community which I grew up in. Natural food cooking, and that led her into meeting a whole lot of different people, when I first started my Tai Chi class, it was at a health food store, and the people who ran the health food store, they also taught Tai Chi. They taught a few other things. They also taught yoga. So my introduction to Tai Chi, I was introduced to yoga at the same time, and I did them both together. For me, Tai Chi, I always loved it. Once I got into it, it was just this whole, my life changed. It was a whole other feeling of being that came over me. And I knew it was good, and it felt good, and I was always eager to get back to class. My first instructor, I have two main instructors, but my first instructor used to always emphasize on relaxation. If you cannot relax, you cannot do Tai Chi. And I'm a pretty laid-back individual ever since I was a baby. You know, my mother, I was so quiet as an infant, my mother used to forget about me. So I'm pretty, and so that was like right into my zone, you know, of relaxing and relaxing into your being. And the more I understood this, I just enjoyed it. I can find the way it was, how, you know, the more as years went by, like you say, step by step, gradually, practice every day. And after a while, an understanding comes over you that I just love it. It's really so natural, a natural way of thinking, and it's just, you know, a balanced way of being that really is really powerful. And then the other thing about it is my health. I'm in my mid-50s now, and I don't take any medicine for anything. You know, where a lot of my friends, they're all on some type of medicine. They all have, you know, they don't do Tai Chi. So the benefits and everything and the way it just makes my life, it's become my life. And I just stay with it because of that. And it's
right
actually,
on.
Yeah, it's actually
beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Let's go to.
Oh,
Oh, I was going to say, let's go to Viola, because I want to hear what got her to Viola.
I must have been feeling that. I must have been feeling that. Hi, everybody. This is Vi. And when I first considered Tai Chi, I was a very stressed-out paralegal working in a law office. And for me, my vision of relaxation was people doing Tai Chi in a park.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked around town and went into the Chinese curio store and asked the gal there, who would I study with if I was going to take up Tai Chi? And she says, oh, Master David Long, you have to go see this guy. And I went to see him, and I saw that he had a visiting grandmaster from China, Grandmaster Yi, who was a guest of Master George Shu at the time. This was 20 years ago now. And I'm experiencing my 20-year anniversary this year.
Woo-hoo!
And, yeah.
You get applause, too.
Me. Yeah.
All right.
And,
right on.
And it was remarkable. I sat observing this class. He was teaching a workshop to people from all over the West Coast who had come to Eugene. And I got my first flavor of Tai Chi as a martial art when I saw this very diminutive Chinese man throw this guy who must have been around 300 pounds about 30 feet across the floor. And I stood up out of my chair and went, wow. I had no clue. You know, that was the beginning of my education. And after my first class, I slept better than I had in probably 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a huge, palpable shift in my life from that moment forward in realizing I found this path to not only finding my center in myself, but being comfortable in my skin and liking who I am, and that in my body, in my calm, I can find power in just being still.
Right on. Cool.
Oh,
let's go
cool.
to,
people,
that's very cool. Yeah.
I want to do a shout out to Grandmaster Daryl Sargent, your host on your other radio show, Modern Combat Masters. He's listening to our show right now, and he commented on our Facebook page that it was a great conversation.
Oh, that is him. Oh, hi, Grandmaster Daryl. It's like there's so many callers that I have to scroll down to the bottom, and I'm like, oh, there's his number. Awesome. Thanks for listening, Grandmaster Daryl. So that's another show, folks, that I'm going to plug. Please listen to that one. Grandmaster Daryl is the chief host of that. I'm the co-host, and he has really great guests on there as well. So, and next month will be our Women's Only Month. We'll have women's guests, so that'll be cool. So let's go to David. We lost David for just a second there, but it looks like he called back.
I don't know what happened there. But
I don't know. All of a sudden, my board went drop, 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 drop. David dropped. I'm like, oh, okay, that's awesome. So I guess the question is still, what got you interested in Tai Chi?
Well, first of all, so many reminders of so many great teachers that I've met and worked out with over the years. I knew David Leong also. I used to, you know, I'm from Portland originally. That's where Kim came to take my classes, and David was teaching in Eugene about the same time I was teaching up in Portland, had the Portland Tai Chi Academy. And I remember with great fondness him coming up. I had a teacher out from China, he said, I want to come and, you know, will it be okay if I come in sessions with him? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So, it was a great reminder. I've been doing Tai Chi now for 30-something years, in the middle. I got into Tai Chi completely by accident. It was a mistake. I was walking
around. What a lucky
mistake.
And
all of a sudden I fell down and I was doing Tai Chi. No, I wanted to learn to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
I had just gotten out of the military. I was Navy, and I got out of the Navy, and I felt brain dead, and I wanted to go back to college. And I'm like, what am I going to do? You know, talking about your push-ups article, I thought, this thing just came to me in my head. I said, you know, oh, I should learn to meditate. That would be like push-ups for your brain.
Nice.
I have no idea where I got that idea. It was kind of silly. But I I didn't know anybody who do meditation. I didn't know what it was like, so I got a book. And I started reading this book. I started doing all these exercises, you know, on these simple meditation exercises. And I so completely and failed at all of them. I sucked at meditation. And so I was like, oh, what am I going to do? And I was reading the book again, and there's this chapter on moving meditation. And it specifically mentions hatha yoga and this little-known and esoteric Chinese martial art called Tai Chi Chuan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's right there. I'm going to go do that. I am going to go try that out. And so I went to find a class. And there was a class at the university where I was going to school. I was going to San Francisco State. And it was taught by Sifu Guangying, the guy who brought Guangping over to the U.S. And that, and talking about Sifu Jamobi, I totally relate. My very first day of class was like lightning striking me. And it completely and totally changed my life from that moment forward.
Awesome.
And in that school, you know, being in, that was my first introduction, it was entirely about the martial arts aspect of it. Right across the street had Y.C. Wong, and who was a student of Sifu Guo also, but he had a major, you know, kung fu studio, and so all of his students were coming over back and forth, and it was all about, you know, this is a martial art, this is, you know, and this is the best and the highest and this greatest, you know, place you could be at. And so I've always had this context, this environment around me that Tai Chi was so cool. It was cool stuff. And it took me a while, or it slowly began to I began to understand how much more there was to it, and that's one of the things that's kept me going, to understand the spiritual side of it. You know, because although the words are thrown out in the beginning, and you read a book, and it mentions, like, you don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
You know, they talk about qigong and the energetic portions of it. Like, whatever. You know, I don't know, but the longer I've done it, the more I begin to understand it, and that's kept going, and I'm like, they're going to have to drag me kicking and screaming into the funeral home, because I'm like,
that's
I'm
right.
Like, one more time.
That's right. That's right. Did we get everyone? I forgot about how they got into Tai Chi. Did we get Carl on that?
Yeah, I started.
Oh, okay.
How about you? How about you, Sifu Restita?
Oh, well.
Yeah, we missed one.
Yeah, I guess we missed one. I was going to move on. But sure, I got exposed to Tai Chi when I was doing karate. I was about 9 or 10 years old, and my sensei did karate. He did Yang style. I think he still does. In fact, I know he still does. He does Yang style, and he used a lot of the warm-ups from Tai Chi in our warm-ups, and a lot of the, how should we say, the concepts, when he would try to explain something, he would allude it to Tai Chi, and we learned some of the exercises. Now, you know, I'm 10 years old, right? You know, he's teaching a bunch of kids and teenagers and stuff, and, you know, in my head at the time, I thought, oh, this is just something we do in karate. I didn't know at the time that it was Tai Chi. So because it was presented to me in such a way that this is karate, right, and since I didn't have any conceptions or misconceptions or stereotypes, or I didn't even know what Tai Chi was back then, it was something that I did, and it was something that I thought was really cool. Then I got into my preteens, and then I, you know, read about Tai Chi, a lot of the it's for old people type of stuff, and I thought, well, wow, so that's what we're doing. Well, I'm going to be doing Tai Chi until, you know, I die. So, or not Tai Chi. I'm going to be doing karate until I die. So maybe I'll just save it until I'm older. But, of course, we still did it. It still was a part of our training. And then I actually sustained an injury. It took an injury for me to seek it out seriously instead of just something that I did in combination with external martial arts. I completely, like, messed up my ankle, and my acupuncturist said, well, no jumping around for you, because at that time I was doing wushu, and I was competing And he's like, well, you can't be jumping around, so maybe you should do something else, like, oh, I don't know, Tai Chi. And this was, like, in the, like, close to the mid-90s, early 90s, mid-90s, when my teacher immigrated to the United States. And I was like, what, really? You know what I mean? What do you mean I can't jump? I was pretty upset that I couldn't jump, that I, you know, couldn't kick, that I couldn't, you know, fight, be thrown or throw, because the way my ankle was, it would have just completely broken weird and stuff. So I went, okay. So the day I set out to seek Tai Chi, I was actually in Chinatown with a friend, and there was a sign on the door that said Chinese Tai Chi Wushu Academy. And I went, oh, okay, that's awesome. You know, so I went inside and, you know, I went up the stairs. It was like in a movie, right? You go up the stairs, you know, the dark, dank old building, right? And, oh, you go through the mist and all this other kind of stuff. And and there was, you know, Master Hong. She was actually doing Grasping the Bird's Tail. And I stopped at the top of the stairs, and I watched, because I didn't just want to go walking in, you know, and I went to go sit down, and she was demonstrating these movements. And I'm like, oh, I know that movement. But it looked nothing like what I had been exposed to. What I saw with Master Hong was you could see the centeredness. You could see the concentration. You could feel the balance and the chi, basically. You could feel it. You can see it. You can almost taste it. And all of her class was sitting there and you know, with her mouth hanging open. And I was sitting there with my mouth hanging open. And the end of class, I stayed till the end of class just watching. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever, because it wasn't, it didn't look the same. And I think it was because I had an idea in my head of, you know, since I did it in karate, this is how we do it. And we weren't like completely corrected on posture and corrected on, you know, the inner teachings or anything. I had this like completely different idea of what Tai Chi was, and to see Tai Chi, you know, the way that I saw it, the second she came up to me and said, you know, hi, can I help you? I immediately pulled out my checkbook and said, will you take me? And it's just been a wonderful learning experience since, you know, like David says, you know, student, always, student, student, student. So that's how I got into it. And, whoa, I just looked at the clock, everybody, and I just realized we only have 3 minutes left.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I know. Yeah. We have a great bunch of guests. I just want to thank all of you, Carl and Viola and Ja Amen and David and Alonzo. Thanks for calling. All these great people with tons of experience. I really wish I had the time to get contact information for each of you, but we're running so short. I do have your basic contact information for all of you, like website, with the exception of Alonzo. But I have everyone's like website and basic contact information. So I'm going to be posting that on the Dynamic Dojo website page and the Seika Network page that I have also. So that way, you know, if anyone's in your guys' neck of the woods, they can come by and visit, and or if they're relocating, perhaps train. So I'll get that put up there. But Bob, what do you think? Great show, huh? Great people.
Awesome. Really happy to meet all of you.
Yeah.
Same here.
This was a wonderful discussion. And again, I want to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be with us today.
It's been an honor. Thank you.
I also want to thank Sifu Kim Ivy for taking the time to do the interview with me last night, so that way we could have these sound clips for our show, because Sifu Kim's sound clips actually paved the way for our discussion. So thank you, Sifu Kim. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We had a bunch of callers and a bunch of people on chat board and a bunch of people on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, you know, putting in their comments and stuff. Thank you so much. And we will see you next week when we have Sifu Doug Wong and Sifu Carrie Ogawa Wong, who will be joining us next week. So have a great weekend, everyone. Good night, Carl and Viola and John Men and Alonzo and Bob and David. Thank you so much. And everyone have a great rest of the weekend. Good night now.
Okay.
Good night. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye now.